Raving Lunatic Mania!
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 94. Curse you, Daily Motion! Curse you! Well, listen, we probably edited that out, but maybe I didn't. But Thomas turned in his chair, and it sounded like he really cut one. And just let one rip, man. Maybe I edited that out. But the chair makes some interesting noises. Tonight is going to be a very different show, so forgive us in advance if it sucks, because we're going to experiment. We don't have the Rage Master here, because he had either papers to grade or a paper to write, and he couldn't make it on Sunday.
Finals or something like that, yeah. And I couldn't make it earlier because I was volunteering at a concert, so Sunday was the only day we could have done it.
But it really doesn't matter, because This week is supposed to be a review of Farscape. And I'm pretty disappointed because the 27 minutes total of Farscape that I was able to watch, and what I saw doing my usual reading and information gathering, revealed what I think would be a very interesting television show. Unfortunately, because it's not on Netflix, and it's not on Amazon Prime, and it's not on Hulu, and it's not on Crackle, and copyright laws keep it from being on YouTube, I was forced to go to YouTube's European cousin that doesn't give a damn about copyright laws, Daily Motion. Daily Motion is a fantastic website if you want to watch ads.
And only ads.
I tried for the last 2 weeks. I wasn't going to pay for Andromeda on Amazon Prime and pay $20 to watch Andromeda just for this podcast. But ultimately, after starting and stopping the original episode of Andromeda 15 times on Daily Motion over 3 days, I gave up and paid the money. So I tried it again with Farscape. I've spent the last 3 days attempting to watch Farscape. I've watched this great ad for Yoshi Gas Delivery, where they come around in a pickup truck and deliver it to a Chevy that's out of gas for some reason. And that's the only thing I've seen. I've seen this ad about 47 times. Occasionally, the show actually starts and then gets 14 minutes into where they show you another ad.
Well, apparently, they did their job because you now know Yoshi Gas Delivery really well.
Right. And I mean, look, Daily Motion has to have some great statistics to show their advertisers, because it's literally the only thing I can watch on Daily Motion. Because if I win, I get like a quarter of the show and I get to watch 15 out of the 50 minutes. And how is Andromeda available on Prime?
I don't know, because
this isn't.
This is a much better show. I've watched Farscape, and I actually watched Farscape when it was on Netflix for a little bit before they apparently got rid of it for, I don't know what on earth they got for getting rid of Farscape, but okay. So I would much rather have us been able to watch this than you having to pay for watching Andromeda. Sorry.
Look, Netflix had to put up that documentary about the life of internet cam girls, so we had to take Farscape down.
Don't ask
me why. I know there's a documentary on internet cam girls.
Oh, I'm sure there's no reason why you would know that, Scott. None, I'm sure.
So maybe that's what they put up there to replace Farscape. But from what I did see of Farscape, I want to see more. It looks like a cross between a sci-fi western, grand space opera, a little bit of Star Trek Enterprise, Star Trek Voyager. You've got one human lost on the other side of the galaxy. He had been striking out for a bold new day in mankind's space program. There's a used future type of look to it at times. There's a war for liberty, or maybe just criminals escaping from an oppressive government.
Kind of. And honestly, the best part of the whole thing is its storytelling aspect of, it's telling a small story, but somehow the small stories feel like they have such an impact on like the universe around it. Like, yeah, you're looking at one small story happening to one character, but you feel like it impacts the entire universe. And they do a good job at that. And character interplay, too.
I feel like he's proto Star-Lord.
That's a very good aspect, because, yeah, he's very cocky, sure of himself, and pretty much, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it.
I just kept thinking that. I'm like, this is the inspiration for Chris Pratt's Star-Lord. This is where it came from. Just in the little bit that I saw.
And wisecracks every 5 seconds, so yeah.
In comparison to Andromeda, the acting from what I saw is better. There was less acting and looking directly at the camera to deliver your soapbox message.
Oh, there was like none of that, honestly. If there were messages, they didn't stand on the soapbox, and they did it basically like the Star Trek way of getting you to think about it without bashing you over the head with it while standing on a soapbox going, did you get it yet? I'm going to hit you in the head with it again. Did you get it?
And even when they did, it was subtle. Like when his dad says in the premiere, you know, no, you can't be my hero, but every man has a chance to be his own type of hero. Okay, you are doing a soapbox, but it's subtle and you're not clobbering me over the head with it every 5 seconds.
It's not a clobber, and yeah, it's soapbox standing, but it's... Even that is a little more believable than Andromeda soapboxing. It's like, okay, yeah, a dad telling a son that, fine. It's a little over the top, but I can believe it rather than I am your humanist aspects and that. Yeah, that.
I also love the fact that it could have been Muppets in space.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's just, they're Muppets. One of them farts helium.
Yes.
And I love the fact that he's like, it is odorless. I was like, it is odorless? And he's like, so your subjects tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm... Honestly, the characters that they have are by far the stronger aspect, because all the characters, yes, some of them, I guess, could you say, fall into a typecast. I mean, you have the warrior, you have the spiritualist, you know, the typecast that we pretty much get from every space show, the man out of time, out of his element, things like that. But they did it very well and did enough of a different aspect that it works.
So it's intriguing. I'm going to watch it. One of the things I saw was they do a time travel episode where they go back and they're trying not to alter history.
Oh,
but
boy.
No matter what they do, they just start killing people and they alter history in the worst way. I mean, they just come in and they kill. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to alter this. I'm going to.
Oh, yeah.
We're
going
to try every single way to change this. At one point, the planet becomes irradiated. At one point, the planet doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, there's also the episode where he gets abducted by aliens and they make him think he's back on Earth. That's another good one, because the entire time he thinks he's back on Earth, and then he starts noticing little inconsistencies.
It's a Rick and Morty.
Yes. Little inconsistencies, just enough to figure out, wait a minute, I'm not on Earth. They're playing around in my head.
So we will be tabling the review of Farscape to another time, when it's available on Netflix, and we can watch it and discuss Farscape. But I think ultimately I'm sad because I think it might have been the best show that we were going to review this month.
Absolutely. In my opinion, 100%. Because we did Andromeda and, man, I always forgot the first one now.
I will say fan service Android was involved in. Why can't I think of what this is? Boy, that's terrible. Let's just move on.
Oh, boy, that's how forgettable it was.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Dark
Matter.
Yes. That one was actually pretty good. I don't know why we forgot about it, but...
I think Andromeda just wiped our mind.
Yeah, Andromeda kind of hit you over the head enough that you went, oh, I want to forget it all.
I will say it still suffered from the low budget of the Sci-Fi Channel. In some ways, it was okay, but there were scenes where this guy's trying to do serious acting, carrying a toy gun that if I bought it for my 5-year-old nephew, would look cheap.
Yeah,
clearly toy gun that was bought off the rack, the discount rack at Walmart, as a sci-fi television show prop.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of scenes and stuff where, you know, it's like you're carrying around cardboard. Oh, you're really? Am I supposed to be taking this effect seriously? There's plenty of that. I mean, obviously, also the times where they use CGI, it's like, it can be painful because you go, oh yeah, this.
All the money was spent on those Muppets.
Yeah.
There's a story where one of the actors got in trouble because he almost damaged the Muppet. And he said, at one point, the Muppet was more valuable on a cost basis than I was.
Yep.
They would care less if I got hurt than if the Muppet got damaged.
Yeah, they spent a lot of money on those Muppets. And they at least look pretty good, but yeah. Some of the effects.
It doesn't completely suffer from Andromeda, where it appears to be a well done fan flick.
Correct.
Correct. And so, but you can see where the budget doesn't quite hold up to some of the other shows that were going on at the time. It doesn't hold up to the cost of what a Firefly was, which was a little earlier than that, or a Star Trek Enterprise that was going on at the same time. You can see where the budget constraints were. It looked okay, but it could have looked better in certain areas for the time that the show was out.
I'm going to say I'm like 80% sure this was also filmed in Canada, because I'm pretty sure the other two shows we reviewed, I know Andromeda was filmed in Canada. Sorry if we're noticing a pattern here. Bunch of sci-fi shows filmed in Canada on low budgets. Might be a pattern here.
And this was the problem before we segue into what today's show is going to be about. Although this is the Mismatch show, we're just going to talk about stuff and see where it goes. We kind of just said we're going to turn the mics on. We have a general idea, but we don't know what's going to happen tonight. One of the problems with the Sci-Fi Channel, one of the problems that's always been out there with the Sci-Fi Channel, is they're not getting the cream of the crop shows. They're getting the shows that the other networks have passed on. They're getting the shows that the other networks didn't want to make, or at least they were. And they weren't having enough money to make their own originals. And so you're getting the stuff that's been picked over. You got Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, which was a show that nobody else actually wanted and isn't even what Gene Roddenberry planned, which was two slammed together. And then you get this show, you get Dark Matter, you get these ideas that someone said, okay, and the other network said, no, we really don't want to do this.
Well, I guarantee you, if they took Wonder Woman, instead of going around the circuit of the main stations, you know, twice, I think, and then finally getting a greenlit pilot. If they had taken it to Sci-Fi Channel, they probably would have gotten that greenlit, and we would have had the terrible Wonder Woman show.
And what's hurting sci-fi today is these shows are being done independently and then going to Netflix or Amazon or Hulu as an original. And it's all the more baffling why they let The Expanse go, because it wasn't an original property that they owned. And that's the justification behind it. But that was a show that doesn't look like it was done on the cheap. It didn't look like it suffered from budget issues.
That I don't understand. That was the one thing they had. Honestly, I'm looking at the lineup of, you know, right now what Sci-Fi has. I'm like, okay, this is generic, 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 and rerun, 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 and reruns. I'm like, there is nothing new, fantastic, or even looking halfway decent.
And I think that's why I'm a big science fiction fan. I really don't watch the Sci-Fi Channel because there's almost nothing there that has ever been done unique enough to draw my attention to it. So Andromeda.
What? You don't want to watch Sharknado 27, the return of sharks? I don't know.
The concept of a Sharknado is just something that I feel like it's what you come up with when you're, you know, a bunch of stoners just out of high school or in college. You know, it's what you come up with in your college film 101 class if you spent the entire semester baked.
Dude, I want to make something like Godzilla, but I don't know. Did you see that crazy movie called Twister? Let's make something like that.
But dude, no, just follow. What if... Dude, this is so amazing. Hear me out here. So Twister's amazing. Twister's amazing. But what if the tornado was sharks? Wait, no. Ooh. What if the tornado just picked up sharks?
Ooh, you mean like if it... Dude. Oh, Twister hits Jaws, man. I love it.
What are we going to call it? Twister Jaws?
No, that's too intense, man. I think we might get copyrighted. I know. Generic. Shark. That's it. Shark. NATO. I'm a genius, man.
Man, we got right. No one's going to buy this, though. Who's going to buy this? Hello, we're the Sci-Fi Channel. We love your ideas about sharks flying around in a tornado.
Sold. We'll buy it for a million. Oh, yeah.
It's so bad, it's good.
Apparently.
I mean, I'm surprised Rage Master doesn't love Sharknado.
Well,
with his budget for B-movies.
How he loves B-movies. Oh, what was the other terrible one? Birds or something? Or Birdnado or something? That terrible flapping and... Sci-Fi Channel, please just stop making crap.
That's, you know... But... So where we're going to go with today, because we obviously don't have a full show on Farscape because we didn't get to review it because Daily Motion sucks.
Except for ads.
They tell me, you know, log in and sign in for a better viewing experience. It doesn't work. Give me a free sample and it doesn't work. Why would I log in and become a member of your website that doesn't work? But well, where we're going today is I have become obsessed with PC gaming. because I like turn-based strategy games. I like grand strategy games.
Welcome
I like
to the
war
PC.
Simulation games.
Welcome to the PC Master Race.
Thank you. And so this is my, you know, you just can't find those games on console.
No.
Console is really dominated by shooters and third-person RPGs and story games.
Well,
with
I'll
the exception
be honest.
Of a few, they just don't exist.
You know why? Keyboards. You need the keyboard. You need more keys than could ever be put on, you know, a controller most of the time.
For a turn-based game, you don't. Well, for a real-time game, probably.
Well, I
they are supposed to port Stellaris over to the PS4.
Yes, though. I've seen this, and I'm intrigued and going to see how that works out because I don't know how it will work. But for the simple fact, I'm saying there's a lot of like hotkeys and stuff that just for making life easier. It's like, oh yeah, if I want to do this, I just hit this key combination or whatever.
Yep.
You don't need it, but it makes life easier.
So my first observation in becoming, in my foray into PC gaming is PC gamers are dicks. I started doing research, looking at the normal places such as Reddit, websites, YouTube reviews, to try to find out the specs that I need for a gaming PC. And I'd like to say thank you to Thomas here for helping me.
You're welcome.
Thank you to my friend Arch for helping me, because you guys gave me advice that was useful. Unlike going to Reddit. What specs do I need for a good gaming PC? Can I get one at a big box store? Douchebag gamer number one. The only thing you can do that's worse than buying a gaming PC from a Best Buy is to buy a gaming Mac. Go build your own for $5,000. If you don't build your own, you're a loser. Sincerely, douchebag living in his mom's basement who thinks gaming is the end-all be-all of everything and hasn't showered in 4 weeks.
Only four?
Sorry, don't insult the audience, Scott. Rule of podcasting 101, don't insult the audience. Not all PC gamers are this guy. But if you're a PC gamer and someone is asking you advice as to what they need to enter into the gaming world, maybe take a second to say, what type of games are you willing and looking to play? How much do you think you're going to play these games? Are you going to be playing them competitively? What are you looking to do? Because not everybody needs a $3,000 gaming computer to play these games. Not everybody needs a $200 gaming keyboard and $150 gaming mouse. It is possible, and you know, most of my research said you can that the AMD Ryzen 5 2600, which is a mid-range processor, will run almost every game nearly as effectively as the Intel i7 ninth generation 9700 chip. Okay? I ended up getting a decent mid-level range gaming setup after doing all of this research. But there were moments where I was convinced that I was going to go spend $1,300 on a monitor, on a computer, on a keyboard, and a mouse, and it wasn't going to be able to play the games out there because of the reactions out here. The people saying that absolutely, if you weren't building your own computer for somewhere north of $2,200 with the just released gaming card, you know, I mean, people talk about NVIDIA 1060 as if it's garbage and you might as well take it outside and light it on fire. And it absolutely, the first thing you learn is the amount of misinformation on the website when it comes to this stuff and the snobbishness.
Right. Well,
in the gaming community.
The problem is also that it's like you have people on the PC who have basically gone into this idea of I must have the highest graphic settings on the planet. This is when you see those comparisons between like Xbox, PlayStation, and the PC, where it's like, oh, look at the PC, it's amazing. Yeah, probably because you are right now running the highest graphics possible ever. You know, yeah, and probably put some mods on there to change the sliders on your lighting and everything.
Realistic jiggle physics.
Unfortunately, that is a mod for a lot of games. Thank you, Scott. I knew you'd know that mod. But no, you don't need this type of insanity and going way over the top, especially for what you are looking to play. I mean, you are not looking to play the most modern shooter out there with, you know, you want a 60 hertz refresh rate with, you know, insane graphics because you want to beat all the noobs as soon as they join the game and be able to see every single pixel perfectly with no motion blur at all. No, you're not looking for that. So you don't need something like that. And you got a pretty good computer, especially for what you want to play.
And it's amazing because I also was making sure when I bought this computer that it could handle video editing and audio editing at, you know, decent speeds. You can get a good mid-range setup if you're someone who's thinking about foraying into PC gaming, because there just are games, and we're going to talk about 4X games here in a minute. Those games just don't make it over to the console very often.
No. I've only seen Civilization make it over to console once, and that was a terrible port of the game. It simplified it way too much and made it stupid. And Stellaris is doing their port, and I don't know how that will work. I'm mixed feelings on that. I'm hopeful.
I think
we'll
Elite
see.
Dangerous is out there, but that's not a 4X game, is it? Or is it? It's more of an open world game, isn't it?
I think it's more of an open world game, yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of the turn-based strategy games, a lot of your science fiction games live on PC. So if you're a science fiction fan and you want to play some video games that are in your wheelhouse, you almost got to go get a gaming PC. And what's kept me from getting into that for a long time was that I thought it was cost prohibitive. And it was a conversation with Corey. You know, remember that guy who used to be on this show and hasn't been here since we did Back to the Future over the summer?
He must have went Back to the Future.
Corey, we're putting your face on milk cartons. I know where you are, Corey. You're working 70-hour weeks and a new job to take care of your family. God bless. And there's a seat here for you when you're ready. I had a conversation with Corey, and he was telling me, you can buy a gaming PC for $1,000 that'll be able to play everything that comes out for the next 5 years. And I started looking into it, and he's right. You can buy a pretty good, pretty powerful PC to play these games. And the two games we're going to talk about today, for the most part, are Endless Space 2, which is my introduction into the 4X gaming genre, and Stellaris, and I'll lead it off. I can't tell you why I am hooked on Endless Space 2, but I am completely and utterly, turn your phone off, Scott, before podcasting, turn the volume off, rule number two, after don't make fun of the audience.
Man, you're breaking all your rules today, Scott.
Breaking down the fourth wall? Not yet, but soon. At any rate, I can't tell you why I am hooked on this game, but I am absolutely hooked on this game. In a lot of ways, it is it's a card game.
Yeah.
On your computer. You're basically sitting there, you're picking your actions per turn, your resources, building up dust, building up science resources, industry resources, food and influence. And you're chewing up your development projects, building your ships, building your fleets, exploring systems, and it is just click here, click here, click here. Look at this information dump display. Compare it to this stat of numbers, to these numbers. There are no cutscenes. When an event happens, it's a static screen.
Yeah.
There's like six voice scenes in the entire game. You know, most of it's at the beginning in like a propaganda film.
I think there might be some while when you go into battles. Prepare for battle.
But I'm hooked on it all. Even going into space battle. Space battle is almost as boring as it can get in that you pick your ships. You can pick what your fleet is. You have a little bit of tactical room selecting a tactic or two for the fight. Then you hit play and watch the battle play out and you're done. There's absolutely no tactical ground level interaction in this. It is all grand strategy, but it is addicting as can be. You're one because every game is different. Which power am I going to run into first? Which minor species, which minor power am I going to run into? How am I going to bring them into my empire? Am I going to conquer them? Am I going to assimilate them like the Borg? Am I going to find navigatable star lanes quickly enough?
Oh, yeah.
You can get lost in this game to where it is consuming you. And the one more turn thing? Look, when this podcast is done, probably around 9:30, you know, PM, I'm going to start playing this thing and I might be up at midnight or 1 a.m. still looking for at midnight saying one more turn and playing it till 1 a.m.
Oh, absolutely. You can easily get dumped into these 4X games so easily. And one of the problems with that is 4X games have this, I don't know how to explain it either, because it's addictive, where you run into just one more turn, just a little bit longer. Give me a couple more turns and I can build this thing I want. A couple more turns, I can get this fleet. A couple more turns, I can get that next battleship and win this battle. A couple more turns, I will have this colonized.
I've almost got this new ship hull design researched. I just got to get to the next turn a couple more times. In the meantime, let me move all of my fleets where they need to go. Let me spend 15 minutes checking the resources over here. Ooh, there was an election over here in this system. Which party won? The ecologists? How did the ecologists get into power?
I never wanted
sissy Greenpeace people running my empire.
Wait, what? Now I gotta change everything. Now I gotta go back in and change this so this doesn't happen. Okay, now I have to change this. I'm working against this.
I've been backing the murder killing militarists now for the last 6 months because I want to just go take that system next to me, and the ecologist one, and they forced passed a law that says I have to make peace with my neighbors. What am I going to do with my war machine? How did this happen? What did I forget to look at?
And now I need another turn to fix it. Oh, yeah.
Not even a turn. It's 20 turns before another election. How am I going to get the ecologist out of power? All right, I got to go research more military policy. If I research more military policies and I do more military builds up, more manpower, I can get these ecologist, Greenpeace, animal lover, vegans out of power. And then I can go murder kill that system next to me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's the interesting factor about 4X is you can get buried in it in no time and just be like, wait a minute, what's happening? What time is it? Oh, it's 2 a.m.
There's also that moment of horror where you're 350 turns in and you're seeing the updates on the other empire and they're like, a rival empire is about to win the game. Oh, crap. Where's my win conditions? 37 turns away. I spent all this time to lose.
Yeah, that's one problem Endless Space does have that the other one we're going to talk about doesn't. It, on the other hand, has some... I lose conditions are completely different. Oh boy. Wait till you've only started playing that game. Wait till you find some of those conditions out.
So let's move into Stellaris because I played through a bit of the tutorial. It is daunting.
Welcome to Paradox games in general.
I think I'm going to love the game when I figure out how to play it. I feel like I am more afraid of how this could derail my life than anything since the casino opened in Cleveland. There was a moment that when the Jack Casino opened in Cleveland way back in 2013, 2014, 2012, whenever it opened. When that casino opened, I was pretty sure that I would soon be living in a dumpster behind one of the restaurants downtown. I'd like said the Harry Buffalo sounds like a good place to go stake out my dumpster downtown. Because, and look, when the casino opened, I was there 6 days a week. I would leave work because I worked in a building connected to Tower City. I would leave work and go to the casino until like 10, 11 o'clock at night, come home, go to sleep, go to work, leave work, go to the casino. I was going to the casino on my lunch break. Luckily for me, I had the best luck in blackjack of my life and won like $8,000 that summer when it was all said and done. And I had played out my Casino Jones. I am terrified that Stellaris could take over my life. Endless Space is going to be addicting, but I can walk away from that. Stellaris, like, I could see myself trying to work from home 5 days a week with the work computer over here with Stellaris going at the same time. If any of my employers listening, that is a joke just for the show.
Now, this is the interesting thing about Stellaris, because you've just started that, and I have actually played Stellaris quite a bit and actually have played multiplayer Stellaris. Oh, boy, oh boy, oh boy, you will get addicted. For the simple fact that Stellaris has this fun factor of about a billion choices and things that will happen. Like, you explore a new system, you have a chance of just finding something on that new system. Oh, hello, you found a mysterious writing on here. Oh, you have found a insect here. And you have choices that can really impact your civilization, and you will sit there with some of these choices, probably for, you know, good 5-10 minutes going, which should I choose? Should I choose to accept this and save the space whales? Or should I kill the space whales? Ooh, choices.
Kill the space whales. Their blubber and oil will make you a lot of money and jumpstart your economy. And then the wealth from that will trickle down to the masses.
Yes, there's a lot of interesting choices. And yes, you can be a complete socialist empire and things like that. You can go all sorts of different routes. You can be a peaceful empire while warmongering, and you can play it all different ways. You can min-max it to death or just have fun with it.
I chose the Commonwealth of Man over the United Federation of Earth or United Nations of Earth, and here's the reason why. As I was going through, and I'm not even that far in the game, but as I was going through the alignment checks, essentially,
yeah,
you've always got to be like, I've got to let them shoot me six times and destroy four of my ships before I fire back. I really don't like, and the dichotomy of this, there should be something in the middle. You either get to choose to be the people who have to play like a principled good alignment, or you get to choose the chaotic evil people.
Well, luckily,
there should be something between principled good and the Southern Confederacy. Yeah.
I do understand where you're coming from. I mean, you can kind of mix and match some of it, but there is definitely, if you pick something from one side, you can't pick from the other side, which kind of makes you, it's like, either I'm pacifist or I'm warmongering. It's
well,
like,
I chose the Commonwealth of Man because while you can be evil with the Commonwealth of Man, you don't have to.
No, you don't. The other side does have a lot of benefits to it too, but if you've played the game enough, you can know that being a pacifist can actually be helpful in some ways. It just have to play it differently. But I will be honest, normally I play more of a warmongering empire and normally have conquered and destroyed my way across the empire solar system, mainly because, again, you've only started. I will let you know a couple secrets. A, you will run across pretty powerful empires and fallen empires, which, oh boy, a fallen empire. When you are playing the game and you are like, I'm doing well, I have a military fleet power of 20,000, you know, and then you find a fallen empire where they each of their fleets is 100,000 strong and they have like five of them. And you go, I'm not messing with them. That is the fallen empires. And then you have your, depending on how long you chose your game to run, you know, you have your mid-time period crisis that will be something like AI rising or something that will ruin you or ruin them, another empire next to you and just cause chaos throughout space, which will you then have to recover from for the end crisis that sometimes is just like, well, I am dead. RIP. It's over.
We are the Borg. Yes. Resistance is futile.
That's
except
one of
they're
them.
Not coming with one cube. They're coming with 342.
Yeah. Yes,
the Borg should have invaded the Federation.
Yeah, there is an end event where that happens, where it's like, oh, look. No, there's actually one that's even worse. The Endless Swarm that devours planets and makes them inhabitable. And just whenever it destroys one of your ships, it creates more ships because it's organic and it eats your ships and creates more. So it's like you can send a fleet to it. If it dies, it's created a bigger fleet.
I love the fact that when you're playing Stellaris, you know, to go with more of the sci-fi nerd references, you know that you're assuming the role of Palm Wadib.
Oh.
And you're trying to, you're seeing the apocalypse coming. That is unavoidable. And the whole time, you're trying to build up an empire over the course of lifetimes that can stand its ground against an apocalypse.
Yes. Now, admittedly, there's a lot of funny things that can happen. Admittedly, I was playing a multiplayer game, and my friend, literally, every 5 seconds, he had a democratic elections for his empire. You know, I chose, because again, militaristic, I was like dictatorship. My guy comes, you know, leader, military dictatorship. He comes leader, he stays leader until he dies. My friend had elections. Well, he had an election. And his president died. And election. President dies. In office. Like 5 times in a row because all of them got old. It's like, things like that can happen and just ruin
your
game.
This is what, I think, when I say it's hard to explain why these 4X games and these grand strategy games hook me, and they're so addicting, because you can, the replayability is amazing there, because you can do what you did.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Choose to be a dictatorship where you don't have to worry about that. Or you can sit there and say, what is it actually like to try to govern a democracy? Like how I was joking around in Endless Space. How'd the ecologist win?
Yes.
I had this invasion fleet planned, and all of a sudden this group of peaceniks came up and passed a law that said I can't invade that neighboring empire and made peace.
Yep.
Now I gotta get them out of power. So there's political intrigue going on where you have to, and this is like, so there's a basic way of playing it. Not a basic way, but a way of saying I'm going to be militaristic and you just overwhelm all of your opposition. But then you can go back and play it on a different nuance where you say, I want to be a warmonger, but I'm going to open it up to democratic politics where I have to manipulate my way into the ability to declare war like FDR.
Right. Now, admittedly, in this way, you don't have to kind of manipulate it. Like you can't always declare war, but there's definitely like if you're a pacifist, you have a lot more challenges like becoming warmongering and there's things like that.
I love that you've got to watch for elections.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to watch for your populace being unhappy. Mm-hmm. I read once that if you feed people too much, they overbreed.
Yeah, there's a nasty fact that if your population starts growing out of control, you suddenly are sitting there going, well, I now have about half my planet's full of slums because I couldn't build buildings fast enough. And the population is now all ticked off that they don't have jobs.
And it's all because you fed them too much. Because when they have too much to eat, they just start screwing like rabbits and reproducing.
Yes.
So you have to balance the fact of, I need food production. But the game just, because one of the simple things in basic strategy games is, okay, I'll throw everything into food production at the beginning. But now there's a penalty for overproducing food.
Well, not just that, but you also run across the problem that, this is the interesting thing, because they do, Stellaris has three main resources, and I'm going to say main because there's other resources there. But you have energy credits, which is basically money, let's be honest. Minerals, which is your production, where you build your ships from and buildings from, and then food. Now, as you said, food, if you overdo it on food, it's terrible. Now, the opposite side of that is if you don't do enough food and you start starving, then you have a whole different problem where, oh boy, you never want that to happen. Because then your empire starts basically collapsing in on itself because you can't feed it. That's a different problem. And same with money and, you know, minerals, because it's a balancing act.
Can you over-industrialize and you get like the Harkonnen world of Gedi Prime where it's just nothing, like there's ecological destruction everywhere because you've over-industrialized and no one's happy and there's no scientific research going on and innovation because you've turned the whole empire into worker drones?
Kind of. I mean, you do have to balance your research and your minerals and stuff because, yeah, you can completely focus on minerals and be able to be like, I can pump out fleets as fast as you destroy them. So what? I now have like 7 technology levels above you. I don't need to worry now. Yeah, that's
kind of like World War II where the Germans had the superior armaments, but the Russians were like, that's fine. You have 300 great tanks. I have 3,700 crappy tanks.
Yes.
Eventually, I'm going to wear you down.
Yep, exactly. And that's the fun aspect about this game. Stellaris is you can play it so many different ways, and they're all valid ways of playing. You can go 100% industrial, yeah, and literally just overwhelm your enemy by just mass firepower and just run at them until they can't build ships fast enough. Or you can play it where you are going to high technology route, where you are now building the super weapons before anyone else even thought of them.
But then you got to wonder, what's the endgame event going to be, right? Because let's say you're thinking it's going to be the invasion swarm and you're going, okay, I'm going to be ready for this time with a major military. But then it's an ecological event and your science and technology isn't drawn up enough to handle it, or is it a plague and you don't have enough food, or is it because it's all different, right? Every endgame event's different.
There's I would have to look this up, but there's a few different mid-game crises, and both the mid-game and the end crisis, here's the interesting thing. When you're doing your researches, most of the time, this is the fun fact, is that when you do research and the AI, here's the key factor here, the AI does research, you both have certain selections in your research that have a chance of triggering one of these end events or one of these mid-game crises. And they then decide, computer basically rolls one of those random dice in the background, and then depending on who selected what, it's rated, and it figures out, well, this is going to be the in-game crisis now. And sometimes you get a clue earlier on in the game, which most of the time, unless you've played the game long enough, you don't know what that in-game crisis is going to be yet. You get a hint. But you can kind of use that hint to help, but most of the time it's more of a, oh, crap. Now, admittedly, most of these in-game crises are military aspect because the game is focused on this. So you do have to worry. Your main end game is you have to defeat some incoming empire, massive military. The only difference is, one, which one is it, and two, how do you destroy them? I mean, there's a few different ones. So, I mean, one of them, like, there's a portal that will come, and they will just continue to come out of that portal until you destroy the portal. So things like that. I mean, unless you destroy that portal, they're going to take over everything. So it's they do have some of that, and there is definitely some interesting effects, and there are some really interesting effects that will trigger later. Like, you will have worlds that have different stuff happening to them. There's a one world where you can have a underground civilization suddenly start tunneling up towards you.
The mole people?
Yes, the mole
people. The mole people start attacking? Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. You have two choices. Do you nuke them and destroy them, or do you have communication with them? And that's your choice.
Go back to the old Captain Kirk theory. If it's alive, I can kill it.
Yeah, you can. All right. And that's sometimes in some aspects, but
I don't know, though. Is it a real good idea to nuke the mole people on your own planet?
No.
We're going to nuke the core.
No, you know why?
Because what can go wrong here?
Earthquakes. You get earthquakes for the rest of the time on that planet.
Radioactive plants?
Yeah, there's fun with that. There's also fun with being good. I now have space whales that will never stop talking to me.
Space whales! Do they communicate to the probe from Star Trek 4?
Well, here's the fun fact. They live on gas planets. Like, you can't even colonize gas planets, but they live on it. Okay, I'm going to give you a hint. This is how crazy this game is, and I love it for it. You run across space whales, and they ask you to, because they can't build ships for some reason, they ask you if you will be so kind as to transport some of them to another gas planet they found in another system. So if you say yes to this, you take a group of them, put them on another gas planet. This is what it happens. They fracture and they become rebels. And then they start yelling at you, telling you you have to help one side or the other. You either put down the rebels or you help the rebels. The space gas planet whales. And then they also never stop talking to you, asking you for help. Never. I am so done with those whales.
Until
I want to nuke them.
You're going to come declare war on the space whales and eliminate them?
I want to. Every time I say yes to helping them, I want to nuke them.
So the space whales are the stage 5 clingers of Stellaris.
Yes.
I had sex with a space whale one time and it never leaves me alone.
Oh, it is bad. I hate those guys, but yeah. Stellaris, and the thing is, Stellaris is still updating. It's not like a done game.
Oh my god, I bought the base version of the game. There's like $100 in DLC that I could go buy.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that I'm going to buy all of that DLC eventually.
You probably
will. I'm
going to
play it through on the base game, and then I'm going to be like, okay, let's go get the DLC.
Well, the fun thing I like about Paradox somewhat, they will DLC anyone to death because they come out with DLCs like constantly.
But if it adds value.
Well, this is the fun fact. They do two things. They release a DLC and they release the mechanics behind it. And like you get all this new updates and this new economic system that they just released with the newest one where they've changed.
Yeah, they add like mega capitalists.
Yeah, they add that and they've changed how planets work and how you move population around and how you control your building and how now you have security forces and things like that. So they've changed the entire game from when they released it multiple times. But they also then give you a bunch of stuff behind the paywall, which if you now pay for the DLC, you get other stuff. Like one of the DLCs, you can now play as robots, which is awesome because if you play as robots, it's just really crazy and sometimes in some ways overpowered.
This is where the debate in gaming just drives me crazy because personally, I don't have an issue with what Paradox has done with Stellaris. They gave you a base game and they charged you for the base game. And over the course of the last 2 years,
yeah,
they've been updating it and adding on things that fundamentally change the game, give you a different gameplay experience, and you have a choice to buy that edition or not.
Right. And this is the thing. You can play without that DLC. Like, you can absolutely play it without paying for any of it because the updates that come out alongside the DLC releases have all the important aspects, the gameplay aspects in it. Now, the other stuff is more either cosmetic or some really nice features that is nice to have, but you don't need it to play it.
It's like, so XCOM 2. The base game for XCOM 2 was great.
Yes.
They came out with, you know, the Alien Hunters, which it was a minor DLC edition. But what was amazing was, God, now I can't remember the mod for XCOM 2. Good Lord.
Long War?
No, that's the original mod for XCOM. The XCOM 2 DLC.
Oh, yeah, War of the Chosen?
War of the Chosen. Absolutely. I just played the game for like the seventh time. War of the Chosen is an amazing DLC that gives you a brand new game.
Yes.
And you had the option to buy it or not. And it amazes me how many people don't like this concept, but they love microtransactions.
Oh,
to me, don't give me a microtransaction game. Don't give me a free game. Like, remember when Mario came back out for the iOS and everyone was mad at Nintendo because you had to pay $10 for the game and you couldn't get it for free and then get microtransaction to death?
Yes, I remember this controversy where everyone's like, why are you microing me to death after I already paid?
I look at a game that has microtransactions and I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
At all. I'm amazed that microtransactions still exist. To me, the DLC model is great because it keeps the price of the base game at $60. And if you look back through gaming, there's been no inflation in the cost of a base game. The cost of a video game should be $100 right now. Nintendo games, NES Nintendo games, were going for $40.
Yeah.
Well, Sega games were going for $50. Everything from the PlayStation 1 on has been going for $59.99.
Yeah. Well,
has not gone up in over a decade.
Right. Now, this is the difference I find with Paradox and their DLC strategy with, like, Call of Duty and their DLC strategy. Like, just for example, but like, most companies, when they do their DLC, you have to get that DLC to get the maps, to get the new stuff. And if you don't have that DLC, you get none of it. You don't get any of that stuff in that DLC. It's like you don't get any of the new maps. You don't get any of the new guns or whatever that's in this DLC. Paradox, on the other hand, goes, okay, we have completely retuned, we have fixed this problem, we've changed how the game completely plays. We've added this whole new aspect to it that when we launched it, we didn't think we needed, or we hadn't put it in yet, or we hadn't even thought of this. But here it is now, we retuned it, we fixed this, we added that, you know, and because of that, it's a completely different game almost.
And you get it for what, $19?
Well, that's if you buy it. This is what I'm saying. You don't have to buy it and you still get this. You still get the fine-tuning, your bug fixes, a completely different game. And if you buy, you know, and this is the other thing. You can kind of pick and choose with the DLC. I want this because it has this, and I want that because it has this, but I don't want that because I don't want to play as robots or something. Sure. You can do that and you can get what you want. Also, it's okay. I can completely change my game up now. I've been playing 120 hours in and just get this new aspect now for $19. Okay. You know, most of the time it sounds like you're nickel and diming, but you're not.
Because without DLC, you would have to wait 4 or 5 years for Stellaris 2 to get these updates.
Well, that's if they
$60.
Well, that's if you also did it, because Paradox also has like 20 games they do, and they've been cycling between games. So
I can tell you, without DLC, even cosmetic DLC, your cost of your video games would be near double what it is today.
Absolutely.
They have not gone up in 15 years.
I appreciate Paradox for what they do is because they actually do a good job with their DLCs. I do. And you don't have to pre-order the DLC either, which is nice. It's like, get your season pass. No, they don't do that. They're like, we're going to release DLC. You know us. We're going to release DLC. It's going to patch your game, fix your game, and then you can buy what you want and buy as you go.
I think we're starting to run out of steam, but that's not bad considering that we're 50 minutes in and this was a turn on the microphones and let's see what happens on the show effort. Next month, we'll start Sickest Picks. And Thomas, do you want to say what yours is or no?
I will say what mine was. I did change it because we did mention earlier that I was going with Andromeda Strain. I changed my mind because Andromeda Strain, I feel like we could actually get that in somewhere. That's a sci-fi thing that we could fit into some series somewhere, figure something out. Instead, I chose something that was a little more out there that I don't feel like any way could fit into any kind of series. Now, I did troll when I mentioned it to you guys what I was picking for the simple fact. I went, guys, why don't you guess what it was? What did I say, Scott?
It was Robert Downey Jr.
And a comic book movie.
Yeah.
What ones would you pick immediately for that? I mean,
we started going through the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe wondering why we couldn't fit that in another month.
Yeah, and then I went, no, it's older. Yeah, much older. And I also gave you the red herring of Robert Downey Jr. because he's not the main character in it.
Nope, he's just in it.
He's in it. Yeah, I went with the classic old high school comedy, kind of. Weird Science. Yeah.
Rage Master is going with RoboCop.
Classic. It's a classic.
I was originally going with probably Serenity, but I have changed my pick. And I'm going to hide my pick because it is going to be the Christmas Day bonus show for Sci-Fi Melody. And the only thing that I will tell you, and if you don't know what this movie is from this, well, I mean, you're not trying very hard, but it's a Christmas story that there is absolutely zero chance ever that we could cover on a science fiction show. And there are two types of people in this world. People who think this is a Christmas movie.
And people who
and
don't.
Idiots.
Yep. There's a debate over this movie, if it's a Christmas movie or not.
No debate. You either think this is a Christmas movie or
well, because
there's something wrong with you.
Because it is a Christmas movie.
Absolutely. So there's that. And then we're going to have to pick a fourth one. And I'm probably going to lobby for the sci-fi Dune miniseries because it was so well done. But there are other options out there that Thomas and Rage Master and I will put our heads together on and see if we can figure out between now and the end of the month. Okay. There's also a good chance that we finish up Sickest Picks December in December for once.
What? No way.
We've been running over into the first week of the month for like 8 months now. Which will get us right on track for trekking into the new year, where we review my four favorite episodes of Star Trek, the original series. You guys knew it was coming. I've done all the one-offs. But eventually, as much as we talk about Star Trek, I can't believe that we're going to have made it nearly 100 episodes.
Without actually...
before we make it the theme of a month.
I can't... Well, you can't say that now because we're doing it now. We're doing it... Star Trek month.
I mean, it's possible, you know, you're wondering what my favorite episode of the Star Trek original series is. It's possible number one is Spock's brain. It's also possible that pigs fly. That'd be a whole different list, but I mean,
I'm shocked. What? You're telling me that's not your favorite? Listen, don't believe you.
It is an absolute classic episode where the Enterprise comes across the planet of women who need Spock's brain to function as their controller. The planet of women need a man's brain to function as their controller. Great enlightened message, Gene.
As we mentioned last week, Gene Roddenberry and his sexism. Oh, boy.
Okay, so Gene Roddenberry's original plan for the Ferengi from Star Trek Next Generation, they had to talk him out of this.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh,
the Ferengi
no.
All had to wear giant cod pieces. Because they were massively well endowed.
Oh, I forgot. I did
Gene
hear
was
this.
Adamant.
I did
he was
hear about
adamant
this.
That the Ferengi had to be on screen with massive cod pieces.
I did hear about this. I totally forgot about it. Thanks for reminding me. I forgot. And I'm like, oh, there's a reason I forgot. Oh,
yes.
Boy.
So anyway, that's coming. And trekking into the new year and Sickest Picks. We got it lined up for the next couple of months. And I'm really going to try to get back into doing my Star Trek movie reviews. Yeah.
You have a lot to look forward to, sickies.
Yep. So that is it for this week. Email us at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. Who am I kidding? None of you are going to email us because no one ever has. Leave us a comment at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. Who am I kidding? We've had three comments in the history of the show, and one of them was from the Rage Master disguised as Lord Hoppenscotch.
Who could forget Lord Hoppenscotch?
Or you can give us a follow on Twitter at Sci-Fi Melody. And again, who in the world am I kidding? Because the account's been open for 2 years and it has 7 followers. And one of them is my other account, and the other is the Rage Master.
I think I'm following also, maybe. I actually made a Twitter and started following, so that's 3 out of them.
And it's all us. But we know some of you are listening because there are numbers and traffic to the website. So for the 37 of you who listen on a regular basis, thank you very much, and stay sick, sickies.